Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap. Surveying the Squared Circle, presented by the Fugitive's Corner. Well, let's see. Had a lot of action this weekend. Frampton wins again, but once again injures his hand. Then we have Lopez gets a walk to canvas. Gets his KO as he moves up to the 130-pound class. But I'm going to get Scully on the phone because today is a very important day. And being the historian that Scully is, I'm very sure that he's aware of what today is, and that it's the 40th anniversary of the Leonard Benitez fight. So we're going to talk to Scully about that, talk to Scully about some of the upcoming bouts, see what's going on with Mr. Benitez. And hopefully the professor will be coming by a little bit later on. We'll also be talking with Ernie Haynes. Ernie is going to take us through what's going to be going on up in Sturgis this year for the big Sturgis ride. Team Certified is bringing their boxes in. Good evening, Scully. How are we doing this evening?
Everything's good. How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. And, you know, I was just telling the audience we had some good action this weekend. But, Scully, I'm sure you're very much aware that today is the 40th anniversary of the fight between Sugar Ray and Benitez.
Right. Yep. I still have the Sports Illustrated with Ray on the cover after he won the fight.
Man, you know, I was, you know, just thinking, you know, how not only the career paths varied after that, went in different ways, although both, I believe, are Hall of Fame fighters. Well, they are. What was your recollection of that fight? I know you were pretty young yourself, right?
Right. I was, I believe I was 12 years old when the fight took place. But what I do remember very, very specifically is that after the fight, there was an article in Sports Illustrated, and Sugar Ray went on the Merv Griffin show right after the fight, and he went in the makeup room for the makeup artist to, you know, fix his face. And they were saying how he had so many bruises on his face that the lady, you know, she had to use all kinds of makeup and all kinds of things to disguise it. And it was, they said it was amazing. When she was done, he looked like he hadn't even been in a fight. But up until then, he was walking around with bruises all over his face from the fight. And he was talking about it. And he said it was just so crazy because nobody had ever made him miss like that. And he said, and I remember specifically, he said he was there, and then he wasn't. Like, he was there, I tried to hit him, and he was just completely gone. This defense was just out of this world. And, you know, Ray had to really dig down late in that fight to get things done because he, you know, he was doing well as far as, you know, letting his hands go, but he wasn't landing, you know, the signature Ray Leonard punches. He was missing quite a bit. And as a matter of fact, a couple of years ago, I did an event in New York City in Harlem at a a nightclub there, and it was like one of my reunions, but it was also to raise money for Wilfred. And they showed a video of Wilfred, highlights of him not only fighting Ray, but also fighting Duran and Tommy Hearns. And all three of them, they had Wilfred in the corner, and they threw 10, 15, 20 punches at him and literally missed every punch. Like, literally, 20 in a row. They just could not touch this guy. So Ray, you know, Ray won that fight because he was in great shape and he dug down and did what he had to do. But he, you know, people may not realize or they forget it was not a scintillating performance by him. He missed quite a few punches, probably more than he actually landed.
When you, you know, look back at that performance and you look, you know, you think about some of the other great defensive fighters, you know, that we think about. Sweet Pea comes to my mind. How would you rank the two of them, Scully?
Rank Wilfred and who? Wilfred and Sweet Pea?
Yes. As far as
yeah, I mean, you know, very similar. You know, they were similar. You know, they were very, you know, but Benitez was. Like Wilfred, I mean, like Pernell, Benitez was so effortless. You know, they say people that knew him, and you could kind of get it from interviews with him, where they say he was almost like a child. Like, even as a grown man, he was immature. You know, he was kind of like all he ever knew was boxing. He didn't do anything else. He didn't know anything else. And he was almost kind of, you know, like a child, like immature. And it was like a game to him. He's just there and he's making these guys miss. And they said he thought it was funny. Like, and you could see when he knocked out Maurice Hope. I don't know if you remember that fight when he won the junior middleweight title. And he knocked Maurice out and he was just looking at the crowd, you know, just like it's hard to describe, but if you saw it or you can look it up on YouTube, you know, the way he did it was just like a child, like, you know, just being funny. You know, so I think Wilfred was an unusual guy because they say he really didn't focus on his boxing. He didn't train exceptionally hard. He wasn't like a Bernard Hopkins or a Marvin Hagler where he was super dedicated to the sport. And, I mean, I know the rumor always was, they said he never trained more than 13 days for a fight. And that was the Sugar Ray Leonard fight. That was the big story at the time. He trained a week, 10 days. You know, he just was always just naturally gifted. He could make guys miss without trying.
How was he when you were finally able to meet him?
I've visited him twice in the last couple of years. The first time was at his house in Puerto Rico, and he was just there. Like, he was laying in the bed, and, you know, I don't know if he, you know, he didn't talk. You know, he made noises, but he didn't really talk. The thing that really struck me, it was touching to me, was he knew I was a fighter. I don't know. I doubt he knew who I was, but he knew I was a fighter. His sister told him I was a fighter. And I was sitting next to his bed literally for like an hour and a half, and I was talking to her mostly. And several times during the hour and a half, he would just reach out and he'd grab my hand. He'd hold my hand for like 5 minutes. And she said it was because he knew I was a fighter, and it made him feel close, like we shared a bond. You know, he wanted to hold the hand of a fighter. You know, he was letting me know that that he knew who I was. I was a fighter. The second time I visited him, he's in Chicago now, and I visited at the apartment in Chicago. He looked much better than he did in Puerto Rico. He was much more alert, and you know, he still wasn't able to have a conversation, but he was much louder. He would just all of a sudden just yell out, just, you know, unintelligible stuff, but he had the energy where he could yell out things. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, it is what it is. He's just, you know, he's never going to be whatever the word is, normal. He's never going to be himself. He's always going to require 24-hour-a-day care. So they're just, at this point, they're just trying to make his quality of life, you know, as good as it can be at this point.
Now, I know we've talked about it, you know, but this is something that I really never get tired of talking about because it's so touching to me. We also, not only were you helping out the family and Wilfred, but we also had the, what was it, the Chicago reunion that gave her the sister an award for taking care of her brother. It was her and another young lady, I believe.
Well, they were both there. It was Gerald McClellan's sister and it was Wilfred's sister. They had both of them there together, and Gerald and Wilfred were there. You know, they were in the same room. I believe it was at Montel's gym in Chicago.
Right.
So yeah, so both sisters and both fighters showed up, which was So they gave the sisters, you know, recognition for what they do, which is basically incredible. You know, the fan, and I said it to Lisa one time, you know, Gerald's sister. I said to her, like, you know, it's really amazing and special, and you know, and she was kind of, I wouldn't say mad, but she was kind of like, listen, this is my brother. Like, you know, I don't need credit for taking care of my brother. This is what I do, you know, and, you know, but I mean, taking care of anyone, you know, 24 hours a day. I mean, even nurses don't have to do that. I mean, nurses get 2 days off, but, you know, Gerald and Gerald's sister, you know, they don't take days off. Somebody has to be with Gerald 24 hours a day. Somebody has to be with Wilfred 24 hours a day. So what they do is, you know, is extra special.
Now, have you had any interaction with Gerald at all?
Yeah, no, I saw Gerald, about 5 or 6 weeks ago in New York City. There was an event there, and they came, Gerald and Lisa came in. So I actually was in training camp with Arthur Bitterbeev in Montreal. So I went to Toronto one night for an event, and then I took a plane to New York the next morning, and I spent the day with Gerald and Lisa and everyone, and it was kind of cool. It was kind of fun. You know, Gerald, he doesn't hear very well at all. Like, you have to literally get an inch away from his ear and yell in his ear to get to tell him something. And so they brought me over, and the last time I saw Gerald was June of 1988 at Sugar Ray Leonard's gym, and he was there. I was sparring with Roy Jones, and Gerald was there. And I remember he had seen my previous fight in the National Golden Gloves finals, and I remember specifically him taking me aside, and he told me he thought I got robbed. He thought I won the fight, and, you know, so I thought that was cool. But so here it is 31 years later, and he kept saying, you know, what's his name? What's his name? And we kept saying, you know, John Scully, John Scully. And he couldn't get it. He couldn't get it. And then he said, what's his nickname? And, you know, he said, Iceman, the Iceman. And he goes, oh, he was a bad mother effer in the amateurs. So, he, you know, that triggered it. It was amazing. That triggered him. And we're talking 31 years earlier. And he, you know, he just must have, you know, whatever, the name Iceman must have triggered it, and he brought that up, and that's the last time I saw him was when I was an amateur, and we were both amateurs. So I actually have a little video. Somebody there shot a video. It's only, you know, a short video, but I actually have it on my YouTube page where him and I are talking, and you know, he can't hear very well, he can't see very well, so he's him and Wilfred are very much in the same boat.
You know, we talk about Wilfred and Gerald. They're still here. You know, I mean, when I say still here, I mean above ground. And I bring that up because this year we've had four boxers that have actually died in the ring. One after a sparring session, the other three after fights. Coming up on 2020, what would you like to see, or do you believe that there's some type of safety feature that we can bring into the ring or some type of safe apparatus, you know, be it looking at the fighters in between rounds, you know, rather than just walking by and saying, you know, 2 minutes, 2 seconds until whatever, you know. But, I mean, you know, really look at fighters, perhaps making them sign in and out of sparring sessions. I mean, you know, I'm not saying any of these things are perfect, but I'm just saying, you know, what would you think would be something that we should introduce or at least think about? Because, I mean, we've already had Chavez Jr. that, you know, refuses to take a drug test. Well, to me, if you refuse to take a drug test, then I refuse to pay you for a fight.
You know what? These guys, I'm so sick of these guys with their steroids. They need to start hammering these guys with you know, permanent ban. You know, let's go that route. Say, listen, you test positive for steroids, you're out of boxing, you're done. Because think about it. Think about a guy, say Chavez, say anybody, but Chavez, use it as an example. Say he kills someone in the ring, boxing, they're boxing, he kills them. And then he tests positive for steroids after the fight. Well, now we got to look at a murder charge, involuntary manslaughter, whatever they determine it to be. But you are willfully, intentionally taking something that you know is illegally going to make you stronger and have the ability to cause more damage to someone who you're already damaging anyway when you're hitting them. And if you die, somebody dies from that, then, you know, we've got to look at it from a legal standpoint. I mean that could never let slide. You cannot let that go. So, you know, I hope not, but chances are it's possible that could happen one day. And then what are we going to do? Then boxing is going to really take a hit. So we should stop it, you know, right now. And I don't care if it's to Floyd Mayweather. I don't care if it's Canelo. You fail the test, you got to go. We got to rid you. Not only do we have to rid you from the sport, but we have to set a precedent so nobody else dares test it. We've got to get rid of these people because, you know, I've sparred with a guy who I know was on steroids, and I can tell you that the power that he carried. And he was, you know, he just wasn't even he wasn't a top fighter or anything, but I know he did steroids. I know he did. And his power was extremely unusual. You know, and I know I have another friend of mine who sparred with a guy who he knows for a fact takes steroids because the trainer used to give it to him, you know, and he told me, you know, I used to spar the guy when he was on steroids. And I sparred him when he was off steroids. And the difference in his power between the two situations was night and day. And now this kid, he suffers from, you know, a little bit of slurred speech and different things. And he's convinced it's from the sparring that he did with this guy who he knows was on steroids. So, you know, we're talking really major, major issues here behind the scenes that people don't hear about. You know, these guys aren't just taking them for their fight. You know, they're sparring with people, and sometimes they're sparring with a lesser guy who they could beat up anyway. But now they're beating them up with the benefit of steroids, and you know, you're doing extra damage that some of these guys, they're gonna feel it, and it's gonna be showing up later on in their lives.
But you know, it's kind of interesting that you mentioned that because. You know, I've told everyone that, you know, I'm from Youngstown, Ohio. And, you know, we've also had, the Kelly Pavlik incident where, you know, they're supposedly smoking crack in the gym and things like that. But I do remember back in the day, when I was on quite a different path, there were quite a few boxers out of Youngstown that were on the juice. That's what we called it back then. And, I mean, you know, you could see it. I mean, it wasn't disguised like it is now. I mean, you know, you, You know, you come in, you got a guy that looks like, you know, Drago across the ring, veins popping out, you know, Texas is, I mean, you can actually tell. So, I mean, you know, these were called club fighters then. And if you made it past these guys, then, yeah, you were considered, a legitimate fighter. I mean, I'm sure you got stories like that, too, you know.
Oh, sure. I know a guy. There was a guy from Hartford. His name was Milton Leak. It's called Cuda. And Cuda, by far, one of the most talented, sharpest, most unorthodox fighters I've ever been in the ring with. And he was, you know, to me, he's easily one of the most talented guys I've ever boxed with, right up there with guys like Roy Jones. But, you know, he was just that guy. He didn't train. He was, you know, he didn't have a big-time promoter or anything like that. But, yeah, there's, you know, the boxing game is littered with guys. Like every top fighter will tell you they know a guy who nobody ever heard of, and yet on the right day, this guy could beat a lot of people. And in the gym, he did beat a lot. You know, he's a spank guy. You know, I used to see Cuda, you know, put it on guys like, you know, that had good records and the whole nine. And he'd come in with jeans on and no mouthpiece. And he would, you know, and he'd beat these guys half to death. He would embarrass them. So, yeah, there's a lot of guys. I really respect and, you know, I'm very much interested in those type of guys. You know, because there are a lot of them, and they, you know, nobody knows who they are except for the people in their own city.
Yep, I'm sure it is. You know, like I said, you know, coming from Youngstown, I can tell you stories about Columbus, Cincinnati. But you know, I mean, hey. But thinking about Deontay Wilder, and we saw that the tremendous power by Deontay. There's been a lot of, you know, George Foreman said his power was like a steam and locomotive. When you look at some of the great knockout artists, those guys that we call crushers, like, you know, Bone Crushers and Sonny Liston in this town, you know, who do you kind of compare, if you think there's a comparison, Deontay Wilder's power to?
You know, he's got his own brand of power because, you know, he's got it late in the fight. You know, he's knocked out guys and hurt guys late in the fight. You know, whereas like a guy like Foreman, you know, generally his knockouts were early, you know, first four or five rounds, you know. Michael Moore, I think, was his latest, you know, round knockout. Deontay's, you know, he's different than a lot of these guys because he's athletic. You know, a lot of those guys weren't seen, like Foreman wasn't really seen as an athlete, I don't think. You know, a lot of the guys listed, you know, they were brutes, but I wouldn't say they were considered athletic. But, you know, Deontay looks like he'd probably be a very good basketball player if he wanted to be. You know, he could be a runner. He could do different things. You know, and he's definitely got the athleticism and the, you know, so his power comes from not just the natural power, but the speed. And the thing is, he's, you know, people, I think subconsciously, they think he's a really big guy because they see he looks so imposing. But, you know, he only weighs, I think he weighed some fights, he weighed in the teens, like 219, 218. Whereas, you know, you got Klitschko and these guys, they're all 250, 260. So, you know, Deontay, weight-wise, is not, he's not any bigger than George Foreman and guys like that in their prime. So he's small compared to so many of these guys today, but nobody gets the results he does with the one or two shots at a time. That, you know, there's been good punchers, but, you know, Deontay is a threat just 24 hours a day. You know, he's a threat. He's right there ready to do damage. So, you know, I like him because of that and because he's not just he has the ability to do it, but apparently, like, he's just thinking of knockout, you know, 3 minutes of every round for all the rounds. For 1 through 12, he's thinking knockout.
When you look at Deontay, and I think I've actually followed him probably since about his 12th fight. But when you look at the difference between him now, well, him then, let's say around fight 12, you might have started watching him a little bit earlier than that because you had your finger on the pulse. But did you see this coming at any time? I mean, did you think that he would be this devastating of a puncher? Not only that, but defend his title successfully as many times as he has?
Not at all. I mean, there was a time when I thought Deontay was terrible, that I thought he had zero skill, and that that power was only going to take him so far. I don't remember what fight it was, but I remember seeing the fight, and he had the guy in the corner, and he threw a bunch of punches, and he missed all of them. And when they showed it on instant replay in slow motion, it looked like a guy. I remember saying, it looks like he never boxed a day in his life. Like, it looks like he's never been trained to throw a punch. It looks like he does not know what he's doing. And he actually ended up missing the guy, and it was almost like a comedy. Like, he missed the guy, and he threw his own body over the top rope, and he was, like, hanging there for a couple seconds. So I did not see that coming. I didn't think somebody with the lack of technique that he had would make it that far. But I will say, over the last couple of fights, I think his technique has slowly but surely been improving. I think I think he's been thinking more. I think he's picking his punches better, and I think he's landing cleaner shots when he wants to, as opposed to just throwing them out there. So I do think, I personally see improvement. I think he's definitely getting better.
The patience of Mark Breland, perhaps?
Yeah, for sure. And, I've talked to Mark actually about it several times, as a trainer and a friend. I'm curious, so I always ask him. And, Mark, I know Mark's been working on all these things. So, Deontay is similar to a welterweight. He's a heavyweight version of Mark when Mark is a welterweight. He's tall and thin, and he's, trying to get that jab and come back with the right hand off of it. Mark, I think, has an idea, a great idea of what Deontay needs to get done with his build. And, Mark and Deontay look at their opponents from the same view. So I definitely give Mark a lot of credit for, the recent improvements.
I was looking at the ratings today, and according to Ring Magazine, which now, the ratings are actually put out there by the Zone, and it seems like they have Tyson Fury ranked number one, Deontay number two, and Anthony Ruiz number three. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think Deontay overall, he's been active and he hasn't had the issues that Tyson had. I think Deontay at this point would deserve the top spot based on everything. But when they fought, I thought Fury beat him. I thought Fury won the fight. I thought he was way ahead, even with the knockdowns. I thought he was ahead by enough. But I certainly understand it. I mean, Wilder's the man at heavyweight right now. I think Fury, since that fight, he had his issues or whatever's been going on with him. So I like Wilder as the top guy right now.
Did you get a chance to watch any of the action this weekend before I let you go?
Actually, I was not able to. I was not home. We were out last night, so I did not get to catch anything.
Because I wanted to know what you thought of Valdez stopping Lopez, even though Lopez was actually a substitute. But that's another issue. Here a guy comes in, 11 pounds overweight, you know, and just kind of laughs it off, you know, well, hey, you know, I wasn't going to make the weight. I mean, Scotty, I thought that was a great disrespect to the sport, to, you know, his opponent, the whole nine yards. I mean, you know, am I just being, you know, like too optimistic here for these guys in their career? I mean, you know, this sport used to mean something. Being, you know, being in line for a championship fight, for a title fight, that meant something. I mean, you know, you come in 11 pounds overweight. What was the sense in coming?
Right. Well, you know, without knowing the situation, the only thing I could possibly think of, you know, because to even show up at the weigh-in, you know, knowing you're going to be 11 pounds overweight, you know, it's kind of crazy. But the only thing I could possibly think of, I've seen this happen, believe it or not, you know, even in the so-called professional game with professional people around you, I've seen guys who weighed in for weeks at a time on their scale, and they went, and, you know, everything was fine. It's okay, yeah, I'm pretty much on weight. You know, maybe lose a pound or half pound. And then they go to the weigh-in, and they're 5-6 pounds over. And it turns out the scale they've been weighing in for all these weeks was not calibrated, was not a proper scale. They didn't have the wherewithal to weigh in on more than one scale. See, I learned the hard way, you know, early in my career, you always have to have two scales. You have to find a random scale. Go to a health club. What I used to tell everybody is go to a doctor's office and weigh in on a doctor's scale. And, you know, just go to one in your city every week and see what you weigh on his scale as compared to your own. So that, you know, I think that's a possibility that they made a huge lapse in judgment and just trusted their own scale. Because I don't see how a guy could come knowing he's going to be, you know, because if he was 11 pounds over, that means he was probably 15 over, because, you know, they're trying to last day, they're trying to lose weight, so they're sucking weight. He probably hadn't eaten in a day or so. So he was probably 15 pounds over when he first started the day before trying to dry out. So, you know, that's the only thing I could think of, you know, unless he just, you know, suddenly, I don't know how old he is, but, you know, he outgrew the weight class, whatever the case may be. But that's, you know, that's something. I mean, if it happens again, I mean, you know, that's just obviously not his weight class. I mean, that's 11 pounds, you know, 1 pound, 2 pound, 3 pounds, but 11 pounds is very, very unusual.
Yes, it is. Scully, I think you and Ernie have met before. Ernie, you there?
Yep, I'm here. How's everybody doing?
I'm good.
Scully, Ernie and Team Certified have managed to pull off of one of the great events of the century. As far as I'm concerned, boxing will be represented at the Sturgis Bike Rally. This was it August 8th, Ernie?
August the 8th, yes. Yeah.
So 2020. Scully, is this probably the biggest bike rally that you've ever heard of? As far as I know of, I think this is the first time we've ever had a boxing show at that particular rally. Scully, you still there?
Oh, sure. I'm not familiar. Which fight are you talking about? I couldn't understand it. Which fight?
Ernie and Team Certified Sports are going to actually be putting on a boxing show, promoting a show at the Sturgis Bike Rally. And I was wondering, had you ever heard of a promoter or anyone putting on a boxing event at this particular rally, as far as you know? I think this might be boxing history.
Yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't ring a bell to me. I don't think I've ever heard of that before. So, yeah, this might be a first.
Hi, Ray. We're going to talk a little bit about that with Ernie, but Scully, as always, you know, thank you for coming in and taking the time, man. Any updates on Arthur?
No, actually, I talked to the team the other day, and they said they're, you know, negotiations are ongoing as we speak, and they should know something within the week. So I think by the end of this week, we should have something. But it appears that he's going to fight in China against a guy over there who's ranked in the top five or six, I believe. But apparently that's the next fight, China.
Oh, man. Well, get your passport ready, man. I think that'll be a new location for you, won't it?
Yes, it will. I've never been to China. So, yeah, I'll be ready to go.
All right, man. We'll be expecting some great pictures and stuff back from there, too, man.
Yes,
so,
sir.
Hey, but in the meantime, I look forward to talking with you next week. Make sure you tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
All right, guys. Always Iceman John Scully on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. So I'm active on all three of those. So I encourage any boxing fans to look me up.
All right, Scully. Thank you so much, man. You have a great night.
All right, guys. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Good night, buddy.
Well, Ernie, how are things going, my man?
Things is going pretty good. It's going pretty good. You know, we just coming off the holiday and stuff, you know, for those who celebrate it. You know, so it's going pretty good. How about yourself?
Yeah, things are really going good out here in California. You know, I mean, it's finally dried out. We had our, you know, rain for Thanksgiving and whatnot, but you know, hey, it could be a lot worse, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No airports and nothing, you know, around here closed and all that. So, you know, we don't, like I say, when I have snow here, it's either because I don't turn to the Weather Channel or my cable is out. I'm not trying to hear that. But anyway. So, you know, but as I was saying to Scully here, you know, Ernie, I remember, you know, and this probably goes to show how old I am, but, you know, I remember when I first got married, like back in 1973. In 73, probably from about 73 until, well, actually up until probably modern, the 2000s, maybe even less than that. Sturgis used to be a very privileged place for bikers to go to. And by that, I meant only certain groups went there.
Yeah.
You know, and most of them, you know, were the radical type. I can recall, you know, several Hells Angels, Mongols, you know, those type of incidents. But it seemed like around 2000, when all of a sudden yuppies decided that being, you know, riding motorcycles was the thing to do, you know, and you got away from, you know, the deep-throated Harleys and the Indians and the Panheads and all that, and you started getting what my brother-in-law and them used to call rice burners, Kawasaki.
Right.
So and, you know, you know, here's one gang that's on a bunch of, you know, well, you know, motorcycle club that's on Harleys, and here's another one that's
right
on that. So,
yeah.
How did this marriage take place, sir?
It just now it's just about being just American right now. You know, you had those elements possibly back in the day of that sort. But, you know, it's been so much integrating and stuff throughout America. You know, people really don't even have time for that. People just want to have a great time and a safe time and and just, you know, just want to unwind. America needs this, you know. That's all it's really about. I mean, of course, you know, you can have a racist at a black gathering. I mean, that comes to Black Bike Week, you know, they might have swastikas on, but it's all about the bikes. It's all about the brotherhood. That's all. You know, it's all about the bikes. When it's all said and done, it's representing a movement. That's it. That's in my era. That's what's pretty much going on. Now, the beliefs about, you know, about Sturgis still, you know, it still lingers in the air. But with us being on this event, and Snoop Dogg was on the event this past year, you know,
yeah, he was on
it's
that.
Not. Yeah, he was on the last one, 2019, and it was successful, and they want Snoop back, and they want more groups back. I mean, it's just, it's America just got to come out of that that old way of thinking. You know, you're forever going to have elements that's not going to like each other. You're going to forever have that. But what you have to do is protect yourself from it and just push past it. Push past that and go on about your business and do what you have to do, because this world is going to evolve whether we want it to or not. It's going to happen. It's happening right now. So, you know, I'm happy, you know, I want to thank, you know, Rod Woodruff and Damon Woodruff for giving us the opportunity to be part of history and to make history at their strength that they have established at the Buffalo Chip, which is family-run business. And I would like to thank Mr. Mike Kilmer for helping us, you know, put this this deal together. And it's humbling, you know. It's humbling, even though we had planned this since the day we started Team Certified Sports. But when it started to become reality, you know, and then it's like a dream, you know. And then I'm reading different newspapers and stuff from other states, and they're already covering, you know, this, saying that, you know, a lot of history is going to be made on this particular day. As far as us being on the show. So we're making history in 3, 4, maybe 5 different ways on this event. And it's a good look for America. It's a good look for everything and for everyone. Now, of course, you know, we're going to have someone on both sides that's going to beg to differ. But you know what? If they do, you know what? Leave the planet. Get your ass up off the planet. Go somewhere else. You know, we're tired of it. Everyone is just sick and sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, we all got that same bill on our television stand or whatnot. You know, we all having the same problems, medical issues and all of this other stuff. We blaming this president, that president, you know. Come on, you know, come on. We got two presidents and they hadn't been able to fix. They claim they fixed it, but they haven't been able to fix anything. So it's time for us to, you know, to stand up and just do what we have to do to get the job done. You know, we can't wait on anyone else to do it. We have to do things ourselves. Get up and help instead of sitting back talking. You know, it's just been a lot of jawboning and blaming. Like I said, you know, I don't know if my event is going to have a Democratic undertone to it. I don't know if it's going to have a Republican undertone to it. Because my goal and our goal, and I believe Buffalo Chip's goal, is for stability. It's for everyone to have a good time. is to be in a position to help others and enrich, you know, the economy in that area, and as well as in other areas as well, and to be able to help, to be able to actually matter instead of saying lies matter. Show it. And that's what we're trying to do. I want to be able to help, you know, that amateur team get to the Nationals instead of that coach, you know, working 2 to 3 jobs to get to the Nationals because no one sponsored his team, or either the funds have dried up, the grant set up for him to run his amateur team, so he has to pull another job to get his fighters to the Nationals so they can place in the Nationals. So hopefully one day he can raise that fighter up to be a young, productive adult and possibly a world champion in the sport of boxing or whatever he chooses to do.
This, you know, when I was looking at some of the things that you had written about the event and how the event came about, the first thing I did, of course, was go and look at the list of sponsors. And, you know, when you look at that list of sponsors for the event, the Sturgis event itself, it kind of tells you about the variation of the amount of people that they're trying to reach. You have everything there from soda companies. You have Geico Insurance, I believe, is there. There's a few others. I'm not looking at the particular list right now. But it's a very impressive list of sponsors. This means that it's about the fellowship that's brought about by combining what I've known for years, probably the biggest biker rally in the world, with the sport of boxing. And as I was telling Scott, I don't think in all of the times that I can recall, you know, not saying that I've been a historian of the Sturgis bike event, but I don't recall there ever being a sanctioned boxing event at this rally.
It was one in the Dakotas back in the, maybe in the 80s, they didn't say, but this is the first one ever in the history of South Dakota. And this is the first at Buffalo Chip, you know, and I will be the first African American. This will be the first time not only our sporting event is going to be filmed live on a sports television network, but also another is going to be filmed live as well. And so that right there is history being made. And this is the first time professional boxing has been brought to South Dakota. So Right then and there, that's another one within itself. You know, we're trying to bring some action, you know, some more action, you know, there, and some year round, you know, fights there if we can, you know. It is the first. They've already documented it and they already confirmed it in the newspapers and stuff. In South Dakota, it's been confirmed already that this is the first. So it's going to be a first for a lot of things, and a lot of, you know, smart businessmen would know that this is something that they should, you know, get behind, because this is a good look not only for their company but for everyone that's involved. You know, then it's election year. You know, so This is a great time for any company out there that wants to reach out to the urban community. This is the time. This is the vehicle right here to reach out. If, you know, if you want to, this is it. You know, the sponsors and stuff, yes, those are Sturgis' sponsors. We don't have any yet. We haven't released our package yet for sponsorship, but those are gonna come out this month. But I'm looking for some black organizations to step up and help sponsor and brandish their logo. You know, this is gonna be on television. We're willing to listen to anybody's proposal. You know, I'm willing to listen, and we can discuss anything that you want to discuss. But my advice is for a person not to just sit back and just watch this happen, and they not take part of it, because this is history being made, and this is a very large fan base that we have now. And we got a large viewing base as well. So any television station or organization that cover it, they're going to have high views, possibly, you know, higher views than Vegas, because this is worldwide. We're talking about people coming from Australia. We're talking about Canada, people coming from Germany that's booking their flights and reservations right now. All throughout Europe, they're coming there. We have the likes of, it's going to be 40 bands there, and we have icons there like Willie Nelson. You know, Snoop might reappear, and these people are coming, and they're bringing friends with them that's celebrities as well as company. So this place is going to be, this venue is going to be, you know, star-studded, very effective. And and this is our people's opportunity to stand behind something and show that we, you know, we are capable of doing more than just complaining about what somebody won't do for us. It's being done right now. It's through a weird vehicle, but it's through a vehicle. They have an avenue. So now is the time. And don't wait to the last 3 months or the last month to try to get in, because people are booking this place up right now. If you go on the Sturgis website, they are selling out right now. The hotels, if you check the hotels in that area, the hotels in the state is almost booked up already. They're almost full for this particular date. And you don't have to listen to me. Take my word for it. Do your research, and you'll see that everything is filling up. People is purchasing everything right now. So I'm hoping.
Yeah.
We don't snooze on this one. This is something worth investing in. You know, investing team certified or sponsor team certified, the time is now. This opportunity won't come later. Because the thing about it, later we won't need anybody.
Make sure you go Southwest. That's how you get connections a lot here in California. I'm not sure you people in Milwaukee and in different parts of the country might have to go a different route, but you can get in, right? There are a few tickets, not a whole lot. As you said, Ernie, there are people that, you know, book ahead sometimes for years in advance.
Right.
Especially when you're talking about the campgrounds and places, you know, where they're used to the biker community.
Yes.
A lot of those places are already booked out, so
mm-hmm.
you better, you know,
We plan on having flights booked no later than February. We already reserved a hotel. We reserved the hotel rooms right away. So we're moving into, you know, working on the transportation, sponsorships and things like that, because we can't wait too late to get the sponsorships, because if we do, we're going to have to, that we need time for the logo transfers on the ring canvas and on all the propaganda that's going to be around the ring. That stuff takes time. So, you know, if anyone want to invest and or, you know, sponsor, they need to come now before it's too late.
Now, you all there were going to be, six round bouts, is it?
It may even be 12 bouts. We just said
okay.
Six, champ. We just said six. It may even
okay.
be 12 bouts, because there's a chance, there's an 80% chance my son, Ernie Haynes Jr., may debut as a pro that day.
Okay.
There's a chance that
perhaps we can look forward to. Also mentioned that there was going to be an ABO title fight, a sanctioned title fight.
Yes.
Who is that?
That would be Akeem Black.
Okay.
Black defending his title.
Okay.
That would be.
And Mr. Rodriguez, he's also on that card.
Yes, Jose Rodriguez. Yep. He's also on that card. So I'm pretty sure Pedras Negras is where he's from over there in Mexico. I'm pretty sure they gathering their information to put this in the news as well, because he's fighting on this event also. And there's a biker brotherhood in Mexico, because they've already reached out as well. We all over the world.
And Mr. Kiwan Cheese, I believe, is on that.
Kiwan is on there as well. Yep. And Mighty Mouse is going to make his debut as a boxer on that day as well. MMA fighter, he's coming out as well. This is just the first wave of fighters that we just put up. That's going to come out. We got a second wave that we're going to release on the second set of advertisement, because you figure we got 9 months to pump this. We got 9 months to inform the people. But, you know, those who are getting the information right now, I advise them to go ahead and book their reservations now before it's too late.
You said Mike House was going to be making his boxing debut. I looked a little bit at some videos. Mighty Mouse is, as you said, an MMA fighter.
Yes.
Usually, now we seem to have boxers going to MMA. Not a lot of MMA fighters come into boxing. Ernie, was that the gift of the tongue there or what?
I don't know why a boxer would try to go to the MMA, but I can imagine the influence is there, because a lot of these boxers are training in mixed gyms, as far as, you know, being
about the money. Now it's more about the money. They can get more money and a bigger band base in MMA.
Yeah, in MMA, yeah, they can get a large fan base in the MMA, but the money is, you know, the money is not, I don't think it tops boxing, because that's why a lot of MMAs is trying out boxing right now. because the pay is better. But you know, some fighters are going to the MMA. It's going to be a new generation of fighters, I'm going to call them hybrid fighters. It's going to be just guys that can do, that's just good at both. We're going to have, this is a new generation. They're good at both. You know, who would have thought that wrestling and judo and all of that stuff would be mixed in together and, you know, and be called the mixed martial arts, MMA, you know, I wouldn't have ever guessed that would happen, but now it's evolving again. Now they didn't mix boxing in with it. So, you know, and you're just going to have a nation of hybrid fighters, all well-rounded fighters. It's going to happen. You know, it's going to happen. I might be, you know, 70, 80 years old when it happened, but it's eventually going to happen. Well, a fighter is just going to be well-rounded in wrestling and some type of martial arts and boxing. He's going to be well-gifted in those areas and competing in all areas. It's going to happen. Yeah, it's going to happen.
Now, you've already spoke of you know, the television part of this. There are other things now that are even, to me, you know, and this is strictly speaking up from a publicity end of this, but it seems like, you know, when you talk about, you know, these hybrid fighters or these crossovers, one of the things that seems very important is, you know, and I mentioned it earlier, like the zone, match room, these streaming platforms. You thought about the hype leading up to these bouts, the interviews, I was thinking, you know, like Fight Hype, the PBC series that such as Fight Camp, you know,
say Eddie Hearn, say. Eddie Hearn's come and he says, okay, I'm going to invest in this. Then he just hit a gold mine. He just dropped a whole entire new fan base in boxing that's on top of a fan base that boxing already has, which will bring him to ultimate superiority over here in the States. That's how serious this is. Because we pull this off by ourselves. You know, boxing is going to pretty much take a different turn. We pull this off by ourselves. We'll be able to do what we want to do, when we want to do it, and how we want to do it, as long as it's within the professional laws of boxing, you know, as long as we don't violate any ABC rules or anything like that. And plus, we had a fan base to do it. We'll have it to do it. We'll have the viewers to do what we want to do on television. We'll have that. We'll have that.
You know,
but as soon as a businessman catch on to what's getting ready to happen, you know, he'll pretty much do what he got to do.
We talked a little bit about this after the Akeem Joey Spence fight, and that was you know, once again, you know, making sure that team certified, a record brand. And what made you decide to make this big move alone, by yourself, because you've kind of restructured things here a couple of times, and you've kind of decided that, you know, this is where I want to place all my chips.
Right. This is why we founded the company in the first place, because we always knew that we would be bringing this to one of the bike venues. Now, with the Joey Spencer fight, we wanted to win that fight, but, you know, unfortunately, we didn't get the decision, but we were able to show the world that we do know what we're doing. And if you don't know what you're doing and you get in there with us, we will hurt you. We just want to show the world that, no, we're not a bunch of just bikers getting in the ring swinging and throwing haymakers. No, we know what we're doing. And if you think you know what you're doing and you're not prepared, yeah, we will hurt you. And, you know, in that Spencer fight, they found out. They pretty much found out that, you know, it's not as easy as people say we are. We're not easy. You know, talk is cheap. Like Mike Tyson said, everybody got a plan until they get hit. And that's what pretty much happened there. So even though we lost that bout, we still gained ground off of that bout. We still won because the fans thought we won. And the fans that's out there, they know that we know what we're doing and that we're not going away. You see, what makes us dangerous is we're not afraid to lose. We're not afraid of that. That's what the fans want to see. Everybody is afraid to lose. So what they doing is they hire a guy and they spar with him for about 3 weeks and send him home, and then they write his name on the list as a potential opponent later on in the future. And then turn around and try to sell it to the public later on in the future. And they wind up fighting their darn sparring partner and selling it to the public. That's not happening with us. If we fight, when we fight our opponents, we win, we win. That's great. If we lose, so what? Long as we brought it. Long as the fans saw what they paid their money to see, they didn't see any fraud. That's what this is about. That's all it's about. Some real straight up fighting. You know, ain't no one corner going to be winning all night where a person can't place a little side bet or whatnot because he know the red corner going to win all night. You know, none of that. You know, we doing everything even up. We even matching up the amateur records. If a guy only had 50 amateur fights, you know, and we're going to match him up with another kid that didn't have 50 amateur fights and two pro fights or whatever. Everything is going to be straight down the pike. Oh, and it's going to be that way on paper. And eventually, you know, we'll be then raised up the guys that didn't get those opportunities in the amateurs, because once again, it goes back to the club not having funds to get them to the nationals. We giving the underdog a chance. That guy that wanted to go to the Olympics, but his boxing club didn't have the money to get him to the nationals so he could place and try to qualify for the Olympics. We giving that person a chance. We giving those people a chance to come on a venue where they can be recognized and they can get out there and they can compete with these guys that's in the lights. That's what all of this is about.
It sounds like you not only have your hands full, but you also have a lantern to light your way. You seem to know exactly where you want to go, what you intend to do with the company. Now, one thing that I know I've talked to guys in North Carolina. I've talked to guys up there in Milwaukee, I know you have some plans to bring some other people in, possibly the young lady from Israel.
Yes.
Was possibly a heavyweight that might be trained by K-9. So with all of these different irons in the iron, you keep your hands from getting hot. You got on a couple pair of gloves there, man? What's going on?
Yeah, I got on a couple pair of gloves, and luckily I have a competent staff. Because I couldn't, there's no way I could do this by myself. Tally, she keeps everything pretty much organized for me. She gives me a call and let me know when I have to make a phone call or if I have to be a certain place or to expect a phone call or just different things. You know, her brother, he lets me know when the company's insurance, has to be renewed or it's bond or something like that. He lets me know that, Steven. Tom Moreland, he gives me advice because he's the elder of all of us. Tom Reed, he's excellent with preparing the paperwork for me and putting my ideas on paper. And, he does just so much. And he knows how to use, because I'm gonna tell you right now, my vocabulary is limited. It's very I know how to get a point across, but sometimes when I speak, my mind be on maybe about four or five different subjects, so I wind up speaking about four or five different subjects in the same sentence, like I just did just now. So,
yeah.
But back to my hands being hot. Yes, my hands are hot. They're on fire. So, yes, I need, I wouldn't be able to pull any of this off if it wasn't for them. And then I thank my parents as well, because they help me out and they make sure that I keep a level head. And when I'm short on certain things, they have my back, especially when I'm short on funds, they have my back. So. Now, I do have parents that are, that are stable. And
yeah,
if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be able to do any of this.
Well, you're probably very fortunate, and some of us, whose parents have passed on, that's always a studying factor when you can look back and know that you have a very solid foundation.
Foundation is everything.
Speaking of foundations, like I said, you now that rebuilt the organization more or less from the ground up, what made you decide to make the changes that you made within the organization, and how did that help you when you went in search of making history and continue?
But, I always knew that I was going to, make history, because I did the research before when we named the company. I did the research way ahead of time, and I was telling people before this happened that this was going to happen. And now it's happening. But, there was a process that we had to go through. We had to go through getting the right fighters with the right attitudes and things like that. So, of course, I walked away from, quite a few fighters. And I wasn't going to sign any fighters till I was sure that I had the right crop that fit us. We talked about that this past summer. I don't like any, boisterous fighters, but everything was pretty much everything was pretty much carefully thought out. You know, I made some mistakes here and there, but you know, some of them was noticeable, and some of them, you know, was noticeable. And and we just moving forward, you know. I have my oldest daughter. She's starting to learn the business right now, and hopefully, you know, my sons, you know, kick in and start learning business. They can take it to, you know, a whole nother level, you know, because, you know, I'm not going to be able to do this, you know, forever. But yeah, this change, this was a direction that was already pre-planned. Only thing we wanted to do was make a strong showing on the main circuit, just to show the people that we do know what we're doing. And then we go ahead and branch off and create our own world, create our own bubble. And, you know, and if we have to later on in the future, if we have to go to war with somebody that's on the mainstream, then so be it. So be it. We'll be prepared. But in the meantime, we getting these guys that's not getting the opportunities. We giving them a chance. We giving them a fair shake. Instead of them getting on national television and getting whacked out because they only had one amateur fight and lost that one. Now they finding themselves on television in front of a gold medalist getting whacked out. And which I shared a video of that with you, I think a couple weeks ago. It's a clear way to get someone killed.
Well,
a clear
yeah,
way.
We,
you know, that guy had no business on television fighting this guy. He looked
well,
like a hot-ass cat.
It's kind of like you know, we had talked about the safety in the ring before. A lot of things. We're going to spend, like you said, we have from now to August, we're going to get our own network up and going, interview our fighters, make sure that we keep our Facebook presence right here on the Pugilist Corner, as well as certified TV. We're going to start introducing the world to our fighters. Give you a call or text later on, because I definitely would like to start out with Mighty Mouse then go down with to the rest of our fighters. We've had Akeem on a couple of times, but I love his story and the way that he's pulled himself up from his bootstraps had to be around him through his tragedy. We have a lot of time to introduce our family to everyone else's family from now until August 8th. We will be a continuous presence on social media, Instagram, Twitter, all of the search engines. I'll be in touch with Tally for that also. So,
I can't wait to see you out there.
Hey man, look here. I have so many plans, man. Things I want to do with the show, the way that you have stuck by me, through the hard times. And I'm not going nowhere unless you fire me. And so
can't do that, right? Just stick with me and we can't go anywhere but up. I mean, we about as low as we can go except the grave, and I'm not afraid of the grave.
Hey man, look here. I tell people I've been through 3 wars and 5 penitentiaries, so there's not a whole lot of things that you can tell me about death. I've been faced it, so I'm good. So,
thank
hey man. you know. But anyway, you know. I'm not one of those that tries to pretend that I'm not who I'm not. So, you know,
right.
This is me, and you know that's it. So hey,
what you see is what you get, right?
That's it. You know,
right.
That's you know. I mean, you know, I got too old. I'm like the turtle now. You know, I got the shell, and this is me. This is it.
Right. This is. That's the way I am.
I ain't gonna wake up in the morning and be a swan or a duck or nothing. I'm still gonna be me. You know,
still right. Exactly. Yes. Yes. You know, nothing is gonna change at this point right now unless we make it. As we make it change. Yeah. And that's all this is about, you know. I may falter here and there, but you know, I have enough people around me that will help me self-correct. So if you got a good team that cares about you and that believes in and understands what you're saying and what you're thinking, you know, sky's the limit from there. Sky's the limit. Yeah.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Well, Ernie, make sure, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media, anything that want us to know before we get out of here. And, hey, I look forward to talking to the rest of the team real soon, man.
Okay, all right. And, yeah, I can be found on Facebook and different other social medias, but I'm primarily on Facebook, Ernie Haynes, H-A-I-N-E-S. Just send me a request and I will accept your, you know, request. And I have pretty much nothing else to say right now because, you know, my brain is just kind of full, and like you say, my hands is hot, and you know, I got a lot of things that I have to get done, you know, this month and next month, because execution time is February, to make sure that we have this down and, you know, all the reservations secured and travel and stuff taken care of. So the time is now. All I have to say is if someone would like to sponsor, just give me an inbox and I'll get a packet to you. If someone like to invest, just inbox me. I'll inbox your number and we'll set up a conference and just have your deal ready to email to me or whatnot, what you propose. And if it's something that's feasible, then, you know, we'll consider it. So, and that's all I have to say for, you know, tonight. Let everybody know and our fans that, you know, I love y'all and let's move forward. Let's stop looking back and look into the future.
Hey, all right, man. That's what we all need is words of encouragement. So, hey, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We look forward to talking to more team certified. And, hey, man, you keep doing what you're doing, and we'll make it. So.
Oh, thank you. Yes, we will. Yes,
we will. Faith, man.
I do too. Okay, well, you have a good night.
You too. You have a great one.
All right, you too. Bye.
For everyone listening, that was Ernie Haynes, Team Certified. We also had John Scully on, always talking about what's happening, and got his finger on the pulse of boxing. So, hey, we'd like to thank our guests, thank listeners. Look forward to talking to you Tuesday night right here on the Dog Pound with K9 Bundry. Have a great night, everyone. We'll see you next week right here on the Weekend Wrap. Ooh.